irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
Hey, J. Michael Michael here, and if you're like me, you love talk radio. And like me, you just can't find the right AM stations on your talk radio habit. So, how about you tune into LA Talk Radio? See, LA Talk Radio is a .com and has it all, from sports to politics to religion to, well, to just regular talk. And right now, we have the beginning writer's very favorite show, The Writer's Block. So, kick back, enjoy, get comfortable, sip your favorite alcoholic beverage, because it all starts right now.
You're listening to The Writer's Block with Jim Christina, Bobby Bell, and Bob Brill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Well, at least it picks something pretty.
I'm looking at your face and going, what the hell is this?
It sounds like it could be out of something like Shenandoah.
Actually, no, but you know, it's actually kind of cool because it's the theme from The Time Machine.
Really?
The movie.
The movie.
Awesome.
The new one.
Oh,
that was a remake.
Right. So not the George Powell kind of 50s.
No, it wasn't the one with Rod Taylor.
Rod Taylor. Right.
Yeah, it's the other one. Yeah, get closer to your mic. That's what he's telling you. Okay, isn't this pretty?
It really is. I didn't get it because you said it was the new one. So
it's a gorgeous piece of music. I'm impressed.
I am too.
I took all day to find this, amongst doing other things.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, hey, Bobby.
Hey, Jimmy.
It is Thursday night. This is, of course, LA Talk Radio, and you are listening to The Writer's Block. I am Jim Christina, your host, in studio with Bob Brill.
Me too.
And we have our guest in studio tonight. Bobby Jean is out gallivanting around doing whatever she
does. Yeah, that's what she tells you.
In New Mexico. So, her show started.
That's right, her radio show.
Yeah, but yeah. You have to listen to it live.
Oh, really?
Yeah, there's no podcast, so you have to listen to it live. It's, I forgot the name of it. It's country. It's Western Music Radio or something.
Yes. It has to do with out back out west or something because of her.
Yeah. Store. Yeah, because she is, of course, WWMA, whatever it is. Anyway. Fun day. Fun week. And another week just...
I know. You know, the holidays and everything, it's just like the traffic is horrible.
Oh, my God.
You know, it literally, I live... What, 12 miles from here?
Yeah, probably 12, you know, 14 miles.
12,
yeah.
Almost 2 hours.
Ooh.
Yeah, because it was just like unbelievable. I mean, first of all, it's coming up to the holidays, so everybody's out.
Right.
You know, and the funny thing was, there was no accidents. It was just too much traffic.
Right.
Life in L.A.
Well, I mean, you know, these guys are coming from Anaheim.
Yeah, and our commute was shorter than yours.
Yeah, just yeah. Insane.
But I mean, you know, that's what happens when you live in a trailer park on the outside of Anaheim.
Well, you would know. With a dog and a shotgun. And
I know. Yeah. We have actually our guest in the studio tonight with his lovely wife. And Ken has been, he's been in with us before. He's a writer and a tech writer and an actor and a singer and a musician. And now he's an unemployed bum letting his wife make all the money. He's a hell of a writer. It's Mr. Ken LaSalle.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the Writer's Block, Ken, and welcome back. And here, let me give you some clap. You didn't have to do that live, Bob. We have...
I didn't see you pushing a button.
We have that, and we have...
Oh, my God. Henry's here?
That's for Henry.
Well, I should say, you know, you're using a new piece of equipment tonight.
Yes.
So.
It is. And, yes, it's really old.
I know. I'm looking at it saying, oh, my gosh. It was like when I first started in radio.
You know, I have a TEC 8-track...
No way.
...digital recorder.
Oh, jeez.
You know, yeah. It's just like this, and I couldn't figure it out. You know,
the first TAC I ever owned got stolen. It was reel to reel.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, the big old 7-inch reel.
A sound on sound, mm-hmm. 4-track reel to reel.
With it was stereo, so it had 2 meters.
Yeah.
I am so glad I've got a computer and a microphone, and that is
that's all you need.
Oh, man, I'll tell you what. When back in the day, of course, the day being 40 years ago. God, really, 40 years ago. Reel-to-reel, the cassette was brand new. And reel-to-reel was, I mean, if you want a really good hi-fi sound or stereophonic sound, reel-to-reel was the way to go.
Little trivia about Vicky. Her grandfather...
Wait a minute. Is this really good?
It's really good, okay. But it's not really bad.
Oh,
her
okay.
grandfather...
You don't have a cough, but...
Used to, he used to record live performances of bands in Southern California on reel-to-reel.
Yeah.
And when he died, we were unpacking some of his things, and he had just acres of recordings of all kinds of bands.
Oh, wow.
Pristine condition.
Yeah.
On these reel-to-reel tapes.
Any big bands? Or
There were, but I can't remember a single one.
Wow.
Wow. You know, when I was a youngster... I say youngster because I was like 29.
In the
30,
old West.
Yeah, 31. Yeah. I had two groups. I had one called Homegrown, which it was just Al and I, and we played around Oregon. And then when I went up to Washington, I've had another band called Sundown. And we did a lot of recording on the 3/4-inch reel-to-reel studio stuff. Fun stuff.
Well, I have to tell you that my dad was one of 11 kids, and he was the only branch that didn't get any musical talent, so I got nothing.
Well, I mean, I was 5 kids, and I was it, you know, so. But I did the writing and the arranging and all the stuff. So.
Awesome.
Yeah, sometimes it can be fun. Sometimes it can be a pain in the ass when they don't want to follow what you're doing and production design, but that's okay. Ken, this is his third visit in to see us here in the Writer's Block, and I have to say that I just finished a book by Ken, and it's a strange book, and it is called the Max Dedge Uniborg Review.
Nope. It's called Max Dedge in the Time of the Uniborg.
Oh, okay. Time of the Uniborg. Well, but we have to say that Max Dedge, as Ken showed it, told us out in the lobby, that he leads with his face.
Yes, he does.
And he truly, truly does. The guy, the character is phenomenal.
He's, so describe to me what a Uniborg is.
Well, there's a long backstory.
It's an entire universe.
Well, see, the thing is back in about, say, 1990 or so, I was working for a gaming company that wanted to put out a magazine about board games. And now there's so many of them. But back then, we were trying to think of a name. So I had to... brainstorm all these names for it. So I just started writing down words. And one of the words I wrote down was Uniborg. And they wanted to go with it. They didn't. So I just thought, at some point in my life, I've got to use this.
It's mine.
Right. The story is phenomenal. I mean, I don't really want to get too deeply into it, because if you want to read the book, it's really fun. It's a fun read.
Yeah, I had a whole lot of fun with it. And the whole reason Max leads with his face is because I'm not... You know, there's so many books and so many movies and everything out there about these heroes that can do anything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's great. I'm amazed by him. I'm entertained by him. But I certainly couldn't do that.
No.
The way I would do it is I would lead with my face. And
yeah.
So I said, that's what he's going to do.
Yeah. It's like, I can't take it. If you're going to hit me, I'm going to shoot you.
I think his idea is, you can hit me all you want, I'm going to keep coming.
Well, yeah. Well, unless I fall down in the chute and I go into another universe.
And then he'll find another way.
It's just like chapter 4 of the book. And
ends up with a flat nose, broken glasses, and no teeth.
No, actually. there's no Wi-Fi down there. And he has a pocket person that he carries around with him, Sylvester.
Yes, Sylvester.
Is his electronic conscience.
Yeah.
Actually, Sylvester is his answer man.
Yeah, it's his phone.
It's his phone. That's all it is. And
it's Siri without it being Siri.
Yeah,
gotcha.
And just much smarter than Siri.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and
but unfortunately, when there's no signal, he's not going to be of much help.
Right. Not as big a trollop as Siri.
And then you switch to work of art.
Yes. Yeah, and then he starts out with a kid drawing flowers in a parking lot outside of a liquor store.
Right.
Hey, works for me.
I got to figure this out because, you know, like, I write different genres too, but I mainly focus on Westerns. But the thing about it is, switching from one genre to another drastically like this, I mean, what were you thinking?
I was thinking that I wrote plays for a long time. I wrote for theater for a long time and had a lot of fun with it, and people liked it. and I had a lot of fun with it, but I couldn't move that to my books. There was something blocking my brain that the fun just wasn't coming to my books the way I wanted it to. Yeah, I can hear him too. So when I finally kind of made that leap, which I feel like I did with Heaven Enough, which is a whole other series, that's when I thought, okay, now that I'm having fun, what have I always wanted to do? And I've always loved science fiction and fantasy, so I said, okay, I'm going to do that. But Work of Art came about because we were driving home one day through L.A. Over, what, the 6th Street or 7th Street Viaduct, which isn't there any longer.
Right.
And that used to get, that got really high, and you'd look down at these neighborhoods. And I looked down, Vicky was driving, and I looked down into this parking lot where the whole parking lot and the building and everything was just covered in paint. Just all kinds of colors of paint. And I thought, there's got to be some story there. And after a few tries of figuring out what the story was, that's where I got to that. Because I wanted to write about the kid drawing or the kid painting, but I knew that wasn't all of it. There's got to be, you know, a lot more going on. So I kind of built the universe up around that painting.
This takes place at a school, right?
No, partially.
Yeah.
Part of it takes place at Santa Ana High School. But most of it takes place in a vacant lot behind a liquor store, which is where they're painting all these flowers.
So sort of the graffiti magnet.
Yeah, the kid should have been named Algernon. Boy, that shows how old I am.
Yeah,
that
doesn't
But yeah, I'm a huge fan of graffiti. I think graffiti's awesome.
There's some really good stuff.
But there's too much of it that isn't good.
Right.
You know, it's kind of like hip-hop that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know what? You don't have to worry about it because there's no hip-hop artist listening to this show.
Well, this is the first of how many? Five?
Five.
Five.
Yeah. And it's basically the overarching story is of, you know, I was telling you I like to write idiots.
Yeah.
A lot of my characters are just idiots. And
yeah.
the teacher who kind of fumbles his way through life until he finally becomes a teacher, and he'll keep fumbling. And in each book, I'm going to tackle a different type of art. The next book is going to go into theater, which I can't wait to do because I have a lot of experience in theater.
Me too.
I have no experience in painting.
Yeah.
So I had to do a lot of research just to understand the process of painting, because I think painters have a huge leg up over writers. You know, you can get their stuff just by looking at it.
You're sitting in a studio full of writers, and you're telling us painters are better than we are.
Yeah, well, you know, it's just because we can't paint, so we write.
And that's true. Okay, I'm going to give you that one. My wife is a painter and also a photographer. If you're listening, Jerry, I'm giving you plugs.
Vicky is a photographer.
Oh, are you?
Yeah. Barely.
My wife
barely.
Is a photographer. How can we go?
Let's get them out there and let's have a challenge.
No, let's put them all to work doing that.
Well, that's true, and then I can truly retire.
I should be having you do my book covers.
You don't Jerry, do Jerry's book actually covers? Done a few of mine.
If I could find photos for it.
That's true. I mean, if you look at the cover for Work of Art, if you look for the cover at the cover... Well, Maxed Edge is really simple.
Yeah, it is.
The cover for Work of Art took a little bit of figuring out to get there. But the common thread through all the covers is going to be that frame, and inside of that frame will be whatever type of art is the work of art for that book.
Gotcha. Now, I know this is partially a story about a teacher. Were you someone who wanted to be a teacher?
No.
Oh, no.
But I have a friend who's a teacher, and I hear stories from him a lot. And unfortunately, as an adult... You know, as a writer, I can't write.
Are you? I was going to say, are you really an adult?
Kind of. That's what I'm telling everybody. But I can't write a book about kids.
Yeah.
You know,
oh,
I mean, there are writers who can do that, who write children's books, who write about kids, that's just fine. But I can't do that. I have to write from my perspective somehow. So he's my entry point. He's my guy.
Yeah.
And since I'm absolutely certain I would be a terrible teacher, ta-da. That's who he is.
Which means you'd probably be probably a pretty good one.
Yeah, I actually got... I was 2 hours away from getting my teaching credential.
No, right. Oh. Really?
And I just
Thank
said...
Thank God the
I
world
just
got
said,
saved from
no.
that.
I just found... I just discovered I hated kids.
Yeah.
And I have, like, three of them. Four of them.
Oops.
No, I mean, you know, when they're yours, they're fine.
Oh, okay.
Because you can discipline them.
Exactly.
That's true.
But when they're, you know, 11th grade history, and they come from Air Force officers and stuff, and they're all brats, and they challenge you every step of the way, no.
Yeah, well, that's one of the fun things about writing the kids in this book, because they're high school students who are art nerds.
Right.
And when I was in high school, I hung out with high school students that were theater nerds. So I know that DNA, you know. So it's easy to write those people because I was one of them.
Yeah. I, you know, high school, I was, like, totally into theater. In fact, I was best thespian, and we had won a Helen Hayes Award.
I got to be in our high school production. The guy carried the sign that said Eat a Joe's. So I'm going to...
Well, at least you got on the stage.
I know, but, you know, that's kind of where it was. Yeah. It was later that I blossomed.
There's a sign carrier in Sweet Charity who carries a sign like that. It wasn't Sweet Charity, was it?
No.
Okay.
No, absolutely not. I don't even remember what it was. It was, I just remember the main character thought he was God, but he wasn't. So that's another story.
Sounds like fun.
I'm looking at you like,
hey, you asked, you know, it came up, you know, it's like, we're talking to how many years ago?
I have no clue. I can tell you, I graduated in 1967, that's how many years ago this was, what, 51 years?
I'm not going to dignify that with an answer because I'm too doggone close.
Yeah, there you go. So, I mean, you know, we've talked before, and I love talking with you about your process, because your process is kind of really cool. And that you don't really have one.
I have a tornado.
Yeah.
More than a process.
Yeah. I mean, I write as, you know, I'm kind of a catch-as-catch-can when I can sit down and I have 5 minutes to myself where I can sit down and close the door, or not even close the door, just turn on my music and hit it.
There are plenty of times at 10:30 at night where I will get up from bed and Vicky will look at me and she'll say, "Where are you going?" And I'll say to her, "I need to write." And she's gone to the point where she just
and Vicky's
doesn't even
saying,
respond.
"I need to sleep."
Exactly.
To go like, right. Okay, go right.
Yeah. Yeah. Go.
And I'll go in.
Gives
and I'll
me
just,
the whole bed.
I'll hammer out whatever needs to come out. I don't care how it sounds. I don't care how it looks. Just to get the ideas out on paper, I'll fix it later.
Yeah.
And I always tell people who ask, you know, how do you start writing? How do you write? Just write.
Right.
Don't care about what it sounds like. Don't care about what it looks like. Just write whatever is in your head. Just put it down. Fix it later. Pretty it up later.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's what editors are for.
you know, it's like I've gone kind of both ways where I would be writing my first novels. I would be writing and I would go back and edit the chapter, you know, and just clean it up. And now it's like I want to get through it. I want to get it all down while it's fresh in my head and get it all down. And then I'll go back and, like you're saying, go back and change it.
And sometimes
it's not moving off the paper.
Yeah. No. And sometimes when you have the idea in your head at that moment, it's the absolute best time to write it because that's when you can get it just right. Mm. And I know there have been times, especially in Max Edge, especially writing Max, there's a scene where he's hanging out of a window in San Francisco, out of a skyscraper window, and his jacket is caught on the glass of the room.
Well, yeah, and it rips the inside of his jacket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I wrote that one late at night. I was just, like, the picture was in my head, and I thought, I've got to write this down now, because I don't really like the way I write action. So that was such a really fun little action scene. I thought, this is right there, it is complete right there. I just got to write it all down and I'll be good. And I'm a big fan of that. That's a really cool. I would love to see that on film.
It was a great scene. I mean here he is hanging by his coat, by his jacket, his bomber jacket.
Yeah. And he asks Sylvester something along the lines of, you know, where, you know, how high up am I? And Sylvester says, 34th floor.
Yeah, he's
something like that.
Don't look down.
Yeah.
You know, writing action is a skill. It really is. I mean, it's like writing love scenes. You know, it's like
they're
specific skills. What do you have to tackle when you sit there and do that, when you take on that particular scene?
Well, through your head? What I do when I write is I don't write the things I don't like to write. So, like, I refer to it with Vicky. I say that on the second draft, I add color. Because when I write, I don't write colors. I don't write labels. I don't, and none of that. So, like, in a lot of my books, you don't really get the sense of what nationality someone is, what their skin color is. I don't care about those things. I want to know about what's going on inside the person's head.
Right.
So that's my first pass, just getting through kind of the beats. and then I'll go up and I'll flower it up. But when it comes to like a fight scene, then I have to know as I'm writing it, I can't fake that. So I've got to know in my head, if someone, you know, punches someone in the face, where do they go? What's next to them? Is there a desk there? Is there, you know, what can they fall over? What can they knock down? What can they kick? What can they throw?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I like to have it all in my head so I can mess around with that. Because action is too good. Like in a lot of movies, here's a great example. In recent movies, there's the movie John Wick.
Love that movie.
And what's your favorite? I can't remember the name of the movie. Oh, well, I'll stick with John Wick. John Wick and John Wick 2. John Wick 1 was really good.
It was very good.
It was really, the action was so tight and precise.
Mm-hmm.
Then you go to John Wick 2, and it's kind of muddy, and there's just so much happening, so much going on.
Yeah, and it was just like, the action was there just because they didn't want to stop it, because that's what the movie was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so when it's good, it's so good that when you write action, I always feel like I'm not competing against other books. I always feel like I'm competing against movies because I love movies.
Mm-hmm.
And action works so well in movies that I feel like I've got to get as close to that as I can. And I haven't written... I wrote a fantasy series called A Hex Upon Rhynia, and there were several books off of that. Back in the 90s, and it wasn't really great. It's available online. It's like 99 cents for each book. They're fine. They're good. But I didn't feel like they were really something special. Mm-hmm. So I thought when I sat down and wrote this, when I wrote Maxed Edge, I thought, I've got to plan out everything. So like I said to you guys earlier, I had a big whiteboard, and I outlined everything. I got it down to every nitty-gritty that I could get to. Because I didn't want to fall for the same kind of easy action scenes. Like, for instance, there's a scene where where Max is in the back of a taxi, and he's locked in, and the taxi's driven off the road into the ocean, and the driver jumps out, and the taxi's sinking. We've seen it in the movies a million times before.
Right.
I thought, how do I do that differently so people won't expect what's going to happen? So fortunately, I had a very convenient device in this crystal that I called Squeaker.
Squeaker, right.
And I was able to get them out, and I was able to make it funny and make it dangerous at the same time. And that's when I can do that, that's when I know I'm doing it right. When it's both funny and suspenseful.
Yeah, we don't want to say who Squeaker is, though, because Squeaker is a thing.
Yes.
And Squeaker is a dangerous thing.
Well, you know, when it comes to detail like that, I know last week we had Johnny Boggs in.
Yeah.
We talked about the minutia, you know, and like if you look at scripts, for instance, if you look at a James Cameron script versus a Coen Brothers script, Coen Brothers, they did this on their way to the camel. James Cameron they did this on the way to the brown camel, up the hill, down three flights, and the light was shining off his third button, you know, that
right.
kind of stuff. So... But I bring that up because you were talking about, you know, starting with less detail and then moving back into detail.
Yeah.
You find it difficult to do that?
No. No, because I can't... I don't... When I first started writing, I tried to write all of the detail at once. I tried to write the whole story at once. And what I found out after writing for a little while is my strength isn't in writing the detail. People don't read my books because I'm so great with the detail. People read my books because I can get inside of people's heads and play around in their heads a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So knowing that, it's easier for me to go back and add the things that I'm not so good at, because when I go back and add color, all I'm thinking about is, what did that look like? You know, where was that? You know, I try and think of every little detail I can think of so I can bring those...
Yes.
Jim.
Oh, my God.
Don't you know how to mute that thing?
Oh, yeah. I forgot it was on. I thought it was on stun.
But no, it's not at all difficult. It makes it easier for me because I write just the stuff that I want to write. And then what I'll do is I'll fix that so it all fits, you know, so it feels right. And then go back and write the stuff that, for me, isn't really the important stuff. You know, I know that people want it, which is why I go back and add it. but
you, Bob and I have talked about this several times, and with this, like, several writers that have been on the show, and he had no idea what I'm going to say.
I actually do know what you're going to say.
Okay. But anyway, we've talked about this and about character development and about when you write your characters. You are one of the writers, as we are, that we don't really define what these guys look like. You right. let the reader's mind tell right. you what they look like, and that gives you a constant throughout the book.
Yeah.
You're not telling the reader what the guy looks like because they may not have that perception.
Yeah, the only problem is when you go back and you write, I'm coming out with the sequel for Heaven Enough in about a week. It's called Heaven Denied.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was, I just finished recording the audiobook, and as I was reading the audiobook, I forgot what Matt Murphy, the protagonist in the story, I forgot what he looked like. And I had to go back and read Heaven Enough, and it's so hard to find any description of him, except for there's like one reference of him being black.
That's why I'm writing a series.
and Bob and I, we are in agreement, is that I'll give vague descriptions, like he gives vague descriptions, but never down to the shoelaces.
Yeah, it works really well, but it's tricky when you have to go back and get something
that locks you in.
Yeah.
And then if you write a sequel, then you're in trouble because now you have to go back and reread your old book to figure out what this guy looks like.
Oh yeah, and Heaven Denied is fun, was fun, and then the next book after that is called Heaven for Now, which is coming out next year. But writing those two was fun because I never planned to write sequels to Heaven Enough. But I had people constantly, all these people ask me, so when's the next book? What are you going to do? What happens next? I think one of the reviews, no, it was a review for Wormfood Island, said I wanted to know what happened next. But people were asking, and I thought, okay, well, I need to sit down and write this, even though I had no plans at all. With Work of Art and with The Breakthrough, I know already, you know, most of what's going to happen. I'll be honest with you, with The Breakthrough, past two or three books from now, not a clue. So that'll be fun.
I wouldn't think you would have a clue.
No, I have like broad ideas mm-hmm. of where it's going, mm-hmm. but the details, I love leaving the details out mm-hmm. so that when I write, I can actually write something. I hate when I outline too much because then it just becomes boring. It becomes an exercise in coming up with words.
Yeah, I hate that. I'm going to put you on hold for just a minute. We're going to spend some money here, and we'll be back. Let me get rid of some of this microphone stuff. Oops, wrong one. There we go. All right, we'll be back with you in just a second. Okay, no one reads another boring. No one needs another. Sorry, Bobby G. No one reads boring books, and no one needs another boring shirt. It's one of the most famous quotes of Rock Mountain Ranch Bear's founder, Papa Jack. Out West asks, what's on your wish list this holiday? A bohemian-styled shirt with dazzling embroidery and a pinch of rock star bling? Or go American with a cozy plaid flannel shirt to chase the chill away? Come over to Out West Shop to find the perfect shirt for everyone on your list, even yourself. Use coupon code GIFT, G-I-F-T, and save $10 off your order of $50 or more. Or you can call them toll-free 877-340-9378. And as Bobby Jean always says, it's a great day out west.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, let's see what we got here. Oh, imagine deep blue skies, majestic mountains, and acres of lush green orange trees in a tranquil country setting. Sound like a perfect spot? It is for your dog. That's right. All Dogs Rule Day Camp and Sleepover is the premium place for your four-legged friends to spend their time away from you. Whether you are going away for a one- or two-night getaway or an extended vacation, All Dogs Rule is the place your dog wants to be when they can't be with you. When your dog returns home, you'll have to ask, whose vacation was better? And Bob knows the answer to this.
The woofer.
The woofer. The dog. So check out their website at alldogsrule.com. That's right, alldogsrule.com, or give them a call, 805-524-1100. They're in Fillmore, California, and they're really great folks.
Arf, arf.
That's right. So, this is what we were talking about earlier, and it's the new writers, and we all did it. We all did it. We typed that last period, and we sat back and waiting for the cash to flow on the stack of chapters we get sitting on a desk. Well, you're not even close. Sure, you finished your manuscript, but it takes a whole lot more work to have a completed book. Interested in what it takes? I'll tell you. It takes editing, and it takes rewriting. Ken knows about rewriting. More editing, more rewriting. Formatting, proofreading, more rewriting, and probably more editing. And then, if you're very fortunate, you can devise a cover, and if you're really good, you can get Vicky to come over and take the picture for you. You can get some printed, you can get some proofs, and you can go through them, and then it'll take more editing and more rewriting.
And maybe sell a few.
And then maybe you might be able to sell a few. So why not let the folks at Black Dog Publishing and Tuscany Bay Books help you do that for you? It's a very small investment. You can do all of that for you, and you get the finished printed book you dreamt about when you first started typing, and you help to get some dollars in your pockets. We'll give you all the tools you need for shameless self-promotion, and trust me, we got like a 4-page thing that we send out to people who want to know how to shamelessly self-promote, because most writers are afraid to do that. I got three people over here nodding yes. So we're here for new writers that don't have the foggiest idea what they're doing. And having learned it, we can share and help you get a book of which you can be proud and teach you how to promote it. So give us a call at 805-795-3165 or send an email to jchristina@tuscanybaybooks.com or rpolinelli@tuscanybaybooks.com. We'll be happy to help you out. So, it is now 7:41. I don't know how much time we have left because we started late. But
yeah, I did have one question I wanted to ask you before. Go ahead.
We were not be giving out the phone number tonight because we're I don't know if we're even broadcasting live right now. We might just be recording for the podcast. So. Okay, Bob.
Yeah, before we talked about the shameless self-promotion, before we get into that, I wanted to ask you about it. I noticed you put this work of art, the book called Work of Art, an intention of flowers, in Santa Ana High School.
Yes.
You guys live in Orange County. I'm assuming it's the same. Was that something you did to familiarize yourself with it? I mean, where did that come from? I mean, I know I've written one book where I placed it where I grew up, actually two, but so that helped a lot with familiarity, but I'm kind of wondering about those.
Yeah, actually.
Oh, I'm sorry. There.
Actually, I grew up in Santa Ana, and I went to Santa Ana Valley High School, Falcons, hello, and I didn't want to place it at Santa Ana Valley just because I don't know what I'm going to do with the book. And I don't know how much of the school is going to be left at the end of the series. I have a tendency to blow things up.
Yeah, you do.
Okay, gotcha.
So I thought, I'm going to put it over there because I'm not so familiar with it, but I'm just familiar enough. You know, it's almost like home, but it's not home. So I thought that would be a nice place. Also, if you know Santa Ana, Santa Ana High is closer to the downtown area, so there's a lot more going on down there. Where I grew up in the suburbs, which is really weird because it's all suburbs, but the suburbs of the suburbs.
It's a bedroom community.
Yeah.
And Orange County really is.
Yeah. Where I grew up, there really wasn't anywhere where you could find a vacant lot to defoul or flower. So I thought, you know, it'd be better to put it into downtown Santa Ana where there's, you know, all kinds of places to have that kind of fun.
Gotcha. The, Jim brought up the social media aspect of it. Self-promotion.
Yeah.
And how we all hate to do it. What about you?
Oh, I hate to. I absolutely, that's still the one of the, you know, when you're writing, when you set out to become an author, you start by thinking that you're going to write. And you don't realize, especially now, because, you know, when I was growing up, that's all writers did. That's all authors did. They wrote their book, they sent the publisher, publisher took care of everything. Now, no, not at all.
No.
So I didn't start full time until about 2012. So I've been doing this for about 6-7 years. And as each year has passed, I've become more and more familiar with the industry, especially after working with a couple publishers. So that's when I started you know, publishing my own books, recording my own audiobooks, producing my own audiobooks, having my own podcast. You know, you find ways to get the word out. And for me, self-promotion was always the toughest thing, but I think for each writer, there'd be one thing that's more tough than another thing. And I would just say, you know, focus on the things you're comfortable with first, and then start pushing outside your comfort zone. And little by little, you're going to pick up more and more skills and do more and more things.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, self-promotion's tough.
It is. It's a hard thing to do. Because most people are inherently, they're afraid.
Yeah, and you know, I will tell you that I wasn't a huge fan of my own writing until only recently. Like I said, I wrote for theater for a long time, and that was a lot of fun, and my writing was a lot of fun, but I didn't feel like my novels were fun. So I did a lot of nonfiction. I worked on a lot of nonfiction while I figured out a way to get my fiction up to speed.
Mm-hmm.
And then once I did, and I started having fun, I haven't published any nonfiction in a while because I'm having too much fun writing fiction.
Fiction is a lot of fun.
It is. Once you can, you know, really get it dialed in and understand what your strength is,
right,
and what your writing is about,
right,
then it's, you just go full bore.
Well, it's like new writers don't get the fact that you not only do you have to write in a genre, but you have to know the genre. It's not necessarily know what you write or write what you know, but know the genre you're writing in.
Yeah.
Well, you write
I'm a
in
perfect
like 15
example of
genres.
Not that.
Yeah, you write in every genre known to man. So.
But see, I write the stuff that I love and that I that I have loved in the past, like sci-fi fantasy. I grew up on.
Well,
I grew up on Terry Brooks and Christopher Sasheff and Stephen R. Donaldson, and you know, they really just, you know, my passion was there, but you look at that and you, as a beginning writer, try and write that, and you can't hit that mark when you start sometimes.
No.
So I write stuff like work of art because I wanted to write something fun that was meaningful, that was something that people don't do. It's I sometimes describe it as stand and deliver if the class was taught by an idiot. You know, it's that kind of vibe. It's where it's not the teacher that comes in to teach the students. It's the students who bail out the teacher who tried to teach the students.
Yeah. I get that. But it's. I mean, your writing is. Oh, I mean, everything that you write and that I have read, I really enjoyed.
Great.
And I'm not. I will tell you up front. I think I told you this before. I'm not a big science fiction guy. And the only other writer that I've ever read that science fiction came close to Max is Polinelli.
Who?
Richard Polinelli.
And I don't know that one.
And he's written he's written some very good science fiction books. In fact, I can't remember the name of
it. He's the other half of Black Dog
Books. Yeah, half of Tuscany May Books. But we actually wrote a book together.
Oh.
His first foray into Westerns. And my first foray into writing a book with someone else.
Yeah, I've only written one thing with another person, and it was the most fun I have ever had.
It's great, you know, because he wrote like the first three chapters, and then I got the book, and then I wrote the second three chapters.
Wow.
But each of us picked the character we were going to write. But it's really hard to tell who wrote what.
Oh, wow.
So it came.
That's unusual.
Yeah, it came really good. In fact, we just got another review this week, and it said, God, this book is great.
Awesome.
You know, it's like, Louis L'Amour, get out of the way. These guys are good.
Yeah, but you know, when you finally get to that point where you're comfortable writing, like I would never think I would ever write like a Western.
Mm-hmm.
Because while I love Western films, Western books have never really been my genre.
Mm-hmm.
But now that I've gotten to the point where I'm just having a blast doing it, I was thinking the other day, because I'm coming here, I was thinking, well, if you were to write a Western, what would you write? And I thought, I'd have to write a book about a guy with a really bad rash. Because back then they had nothing. Nothing for that.
No,
and that would really piss you off.
And they
that
all
would put
got,
you in a bad mood.
They all got shrafted real bad. Especially the guys that wore leather pants.
And the thing about it is, you know, and Jim will concur with this, a lot of writers of science fiction or westerns are starting to combine the two.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I can see that.
And it's really been it's been its own genre. It's kind of
it
had,
actually yeah. is turning into a yeah. to a big genre.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, you know, look at the Cowboys and Aliens.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, and Westworld.
Westworld.
Oh, wow. Well, yeah.
You know, and there's I know we saw some at the Wild Bunch Film Festival that was
right.
Couple, you know, it's starting to really really catch on because you know I don't know whether it's because guys like us love the Westerns because we grew up with it, and then there's a science fiction angle that maybe is out there that kind of stretches it away from what we're normally used to seeing. I don't know what it is. I mean, I personally don't get it, you know, but I
think a lot of the science fiction stuff that we watched when we were kids was on the television, The Outer Limits and Rod Serling and
And before that, Gene Autry.
And before that, and Cowboys, yeah, Gene Autry, and of course, Roy Rogers. And, you know, and that was pretty much, the FBI. And, you know, Quentin?
Oh, yeah.
Quinn Martin production. Yeah.
Quinn Martin.
Act 1, 2, 3, and epilogue.
Yeah. That's one. Sorry, I keep getting back to Max, but I can't help it. That's one of the fun things about writing Max.
It's your book.
Like I said, while we were talking, the next book's going to be all sci-fi, and as you get further in the series, these characters are going to meet up, and they're going to switch places, and there's going to be all kinds of things going on. So when I grew up, I always read science fiction or fantasy. It'd be a sci-fi book or a fantasy book. And I always wanted to put the two together. I always think the genre is ripe for putting those two things together. I want wizards in spaceships with lasers.
Why not?
What I want.
Why not? I grew up reading The Man with the Yellow Hat.
Oh, wow. That goes back.
Yeah. That's with the monkey.
Yes.
And Tom Swift.
Tom Swift. Okay.
He, Tom Sawyer?
I did. Tom Sawyer was my friend.
Yeah, right. And you painted fences with him, I'm sure.
I was going to say, it wasn't Becky Thatcher that painted that fence.
No, it was me. What advice do you have for new writers? And I mean, we've been sitting here giving them new advice all night, but specifically.
We've talked about this. My one piece of advice for new writers is don't do it.
Well, beyond
stay
that.
Stay far away. Because there's so many writers.
Yeah.
There's so, and it's great because there's so many voices. And that's awesome. You see all kinds of new weird things. And that's great. But it is so hard. It is so difficult to get into. And, you know, some of us get lucky. I got lucky, and I get to write full-time, and it's great. It's fun. But those first years, like I was telling you before, I used to work full-time, and I worked as a writer, technical writer and marketing writer, and I would keep a Word doc with my book going, and I would just hide that away whenever my boss came by, and I would work, I would write. And but I didn't really grow as a writer. I didn't really figure things out until I stopped. I put everything else aside and focused just on writing. And my brain exploded after that point because there's so many possibilities. And so I just started writing everything. But as a beginning writer, it's just you have to want it. You have to want it, and you have to be ready to just do the grunt work.
I hear the gears moving.
Yeah, there's so much humbling yourself involved. I mean, when I was a kid, and I'm by a kid, I mean 35. When I was younger, I thought, you know, I'll get a few books out, they'll sell, I'll make money.
Yeah, right. Well, and that's a pipe dream.
Yeah, and you don't realize, no, you've got to do so much work. The tried and true process for selling books is really easy. You write one book and you write it over and over and over. You write a sci-fi book, you write 10 sci-fi books, you write 20 sci-fi books. Mm-hmm. You get an audience, you build an audience. You don't do what I do.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah.
Because what I do is I write what I find interesting, what I think is going to be fascinating. Mm-hmm. And so I write about ethics, and I write about losing my father, and I write about Max Dedge, and I write about
zombies
who are sex addicts,
Sex addict zombies.
Yeah, Worm Food Island. Check it out. It's disgusting. Oh, you'll love it.
It's sort of the curse of the blessing of the internet. You know, so many people. The internet's made it so easy to do so many things.
Oh yeah, it's totally democratized the process.
But at the same time, it's totally made it easy to everybody think they can do it and to do it badly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah.
And it sort of has hurt the industry, but it's saying, what you're saying is that the voices get out there, so that's the super positive.
Yeah, there's a positive way of looking at it, but you're right, there's so much bad writing out there. There's so much bad writing out there. It just blows me away.
Not that you've ever written anything.
Not that I've ever written anything bad.
Yeah, me either. I don't write.
But check out the Hex series; you'll enjoy that. no, when I first started going independent, I thought, you know, I've got all these books that I've written that aren't my best work, but I'm going to put it out there and make it real cheap because that was me. I just felt like, I don't know, for some reason, as an artist, I just wanted to have that out there so people could see where I came from.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm talking, when I talk about bad writing, I'm just talking about lazy writing. There's just so much lazy, mm-hmm. boring, simple writing mm-hmm. out there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no reason for it. You know, watch TV. You'll find out that those stories that used to be the way people wrote stories just aren't there anymore. And there's just no reason for it. Just, yeah. You know.
Well, some writers think, and I mean, I have gotten fairly graphic, I would guess would be a good word. I've gotten a little bit graphic in some of my writing, but I mean, it's always germane to the story.
Oh yeah,
it's not just gratuitous, like battle scenes.
Yeah,
I love a good fight.
Oh yeah,
it's like I was telling you out in the lobby. I said, you know, I just finished a book that's first draft, and it's at the end of this fight with these Comanches and these three guys. The other two guys are dead, and this guy's standing up in the berm, and all he has is a knife in his hand.
Yeah.
And these Comanches are coming at him, and he's screaming at him, come and get me. Come and get me, you goddamn Comanches. And, you know, they stop. And they go, what the hell? And, you know, but then I did the research I did, and they did that because crazy people were revered.
Yeah.
And they figure some guy standing on the edge of a berm with a knife in his hand saying, come and get me, he's got to be nuts.
Yeah, he knows something you don't know.
So one of the Comanches broke away and he walked up to him and within 15 feet and he just did the, you know, you're good, turn around and rode off. And he's going, wait a minute.
Well, relate that to the L-Day stuff. If you're downtown L.A. and you see a guy standing on the corner yelling at himself with a cup on his head, are you going to go over to him?
No. Same thing. I mean, same thing. You know, and so, I get that. Have you ever, and this is a question I ask a lot of writers now because this happened to me, have you ever, a story ever come to you in a dream?
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, so, well, you know, not necessarily a story, but
I guess that's a yes, Bob.
There's a scene, there's a bit in, and I want to say it's a Grand Canyon, but I'm not sure what book of mine. It might be a Grand Canyon, it might be Climbing Maya. I dreamed a musical number, and I put it in a book, and it was just the strangest, oddest thing, and I thought, I've got to put this in something. It's so weird. Mm-hmm. So
isn't
I don't
it like a space captain in love. Or
yes.
Something?
How does it feel to be a space captain in love? Yes. And thanks. I was hoping never to say those words. But
at least not in a studio.
Not for the world to hear. But I don't get the whole story as a dream, but I'll get bits and pieces. And that's usually when I get up and I say, I need to write.
You know, I wrote an entire book in a dream. And I remembered every single thing. I remembered it from start to finish, what happened, who the characters were.
Wow.
The whole story came to me in one night in a dream.
Wow.
And the book is called Jonah Blue. And it's selling very well. It's got awesome. Really good legs under it. And they're using it for textbooks in colleges and
wow.
Well, I mean, required reading. But it's just, I mean, it's a book about a 10-year-old boy who becomes a mountain man.
Oh, wow.
Huh.
And it's just like, it just kept going. You know, and the dream kept going.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
Well, there's no telling, you know, where inspiration comes from. I mean, the best stuff comes from really deep inside.
Exactly.
Stuff that we don't want out.
Yeah.
We don't want to tell.
And the thing is, and that's to get back to beginning writers, that's what a lot, I mean, I didn't realize this when I first started. A lot of writers that I have run into don't get that a lot of that stuff is not going to come out until you have till you push out all of the rotten stuff first.
Right.
You've got to write out all the crap to get, you know, so the good stuff, the process starts working. Like we were saying outside, like it's a machine that eventually it just runs by itself. It'll just start pumping things out and exactly. telling you, you need to write this down now.
Right, right, yeah. right, right. You know, I had a bunch of people ask me about returning characters.
Yeah.
And I don't usually like to bring characters back. But when you have a really, really, really good one, you know, you can't help but bring them back.
Oh, yeah.
I did that twice now. And I did. I wrote a book called, what was it? Requiem for an Appaloosa. And in it had two characters, Bobby Malloy and Jeff Stryker. They were young cowboys. They got picked up in a bar to watch some horses.
Okay.
And when the group from the ranch got there, if they were still there with the horses, they were hired.
Oh, okay.
So, but anyway, they showed up, and I figured they were such good characters, and everybody wanted to know more about them, I did a prequel.
Oh.
And I told how they came from Texas up through New Mexico, down through Arizona chasing this guy. And that book is called Long Ride to Morning.
Very cool.
Yeah, but I did it with another one too, and I just, you know, sometimes these characters get so good,
oh, yeah.
you can't throw them away.
Oh yeah.
Have to come back.
I can't wait to write the next Max Dedge book.
You know,
that guy is so much fun to write.
And they're not done until you kill them off.
And then you could always bring them back in a dream.
That's and then fair. You can always bring them back in a prequel. Hey, look, we got to get out of here.
Oh, wow.
I know.
It went fast.
Another very enjoyable hour.
It was. And Ken LaSalle is a wonderful writer. Give him a look. He's got his own website.
www.kenlasalle.com.
That's it. And if you want to look up Ken LaSalle, look up LaSalle and you can see a car.
Yes, you can. Or look up the Monday Morning Show. That's my podcast. And I'm on Amazon. I'm on iTunes.
Yep.
All over.
Yep. You got email?
Yes, I do. Ken at KenLaSalle.com.
There you go. And thank you so much for coming in and joining us.
Thanks for having us.
I know you guys are coming from Anaheim, and of course you're not employed, but your lovely wife is.
Yeah.
Yes, I am.
And it's good seeing you, Vicki.
It's wonderful.
You're always
to see
welcome
you.
Thank to come you. In with him.
You just spoke so much this time.
You did.
I did. I said a lot more than last time.
Well, but she spoke volumes.
Last time I don't even think we turned on your microphone, didn't
we? I don't know if we did.
Had to because you were just so rambunctious.
Yeah.
Next week we have an author. We actually gave him this slot because it's an important topic. His name is Stanley Goldman. It's the book is Left to the Mercy of a Rude Stream. It's about his mother, and it's The Bargain That Broke Adolf Hitler and Saved My Mother.
That's a great title.
And it's we're really, really, really looking forward. I don't know if Bob's going to be here next week.
Maybe not.
That was supposed to be our Christmas show, but we of course, put a Jewish Holocaust victim in there, so... Whatever. Right now, Hanukkah starts tomorrow, I think, doesn't it? Hanukkah?
Does it?
I think Hanukkah's already over.
Past. Oh, is it?
Yeah, yeah, I don't know. Early this year. I'm first or second week of December.
Last week.
Last week? Okay. Well, anyway,
really early
happy Hanukkah to everybody. Too late.
But that's okay. If you tune into the podcast, you're going
to... That's right. You can
hear it
anytime. That's a happy Hanukkah to all of our Jewish friends. And, of course, Merry Christmas to you, Ken, and to you, Vicki.
Thank you.
And happy Arbor Day.
Yes.
Oh, that's June 14th.
I know.
Merry Christmas.
Thanks for joining us, Ken.
2019 is on the way.
I know it is. And again, on the 20th, we have Stanley Goldman. He'll be in studio with us. And that's all we have for tonight. For Bob and for myself and for our ever-absent Bobby Jean Bell, we are out of here.